Hello. The next practical topic is vacuum. And let's start with some basics of vacuum. Okay. So in vacuum technology, we very often talk about pressure. And now let's look at just the unit of pressure first. So it's how many newtons per square meter. So force divided by cross-section area. But it can be also written as newton meters per cubic meter. So joules per cubic meter, and what is it? It is energy per volume, so energy density. Pressure is the same as energy density. How can we understand that? Well, take for example Meissner effect, which means that a superconductor is levitating in the magnetic field. And in the superconductor, inside the superconductor, there is no magnetic field. And outside the permanent magnet, there is a magnetic field. And the magnetic field has energy density. And there is pressure on the surface of of the permanent magnet piece, and usually the magnetic field is stronger on the other side than on the opposite side. So that makes the permanent magnet levitate in a magnetic field. So we can just look at the energy density, and for magnetic field you can easily calculate it. Or you can think of how wind acts on a sail. So we have air density and its velocity. So we can calculate its energy density, and the sail stops the wind. So on the back side, there is no wind, and on the wind side, there's wind which is stopped by the sail. So you can then 1/2 times air density times the velocity, average velocity squared, gives you the energy density or pressure. Okay. Keep this in mind, that then many things are much more easy to understand, like partial pressures. Pascal, so newtons per square meter is the SI unit, but very often we see bars or millibars or atmospheres or torrs. So one atmosphere is about the same as bar. So it's not exactly 100,000 pascals, but very close. So in practice, one atmosphere is one bar. It's only error of 1.3%. And in vacuum technology, we quite often use millibars for historical reasons, or torrs, millimeters of mercury. Okay, you will see these wherever you read about vacuum or pressure, then different kind of units are used. This Pascal is becoming very, very slowly because it's very, very small. So one atmosphere is 100,000 Pascal. What about the states of residual gas? So let D, be a typical distance between walls. So we have some sort of vessel or chamber. So the distance between wall to wall is D, a typical distance. And this lambda in these brackets is the average collision distance. So the average distance what the residual gas molecules travel between two collisions. And if this average collision distance is less than 1% of the dimension of the of the vacuum chamber, then it's viscous. So there are lots of collisions between the residual gas molecules, and the energy is transferred through collisions, and the flow is viscous. The viscous flow is perhaps more familiar to you when we think of flow of water or liquids, but it's also in air. Like if you look at the smoke coming from the end of the cigarette, then you can see this viscous behavior. So turbulent flow, it happens in viscous flows. And then the other extreme is that the average collision distance lambda here is larger than the typical dimension of the vacuum vessel. So then it's a molecular state. So the molecules don't collide so much with each other, but they collide with the walls of the chamber. And there's heat transfer from wall to wall with the molecules which are bouncing back and forth. And there is no viscosity. So we have viscous state, intermediate state, that's between these two extremes, and then molecular state. And the vacuum regions, they're divided into different regions: rough, intermediate, high, good high, ultra, and good ultra. And they are all three orders of magnitude. So from 10 to 5 to 10 to 2 pascals, from 10 to 2 to 10 to minus 1, and so forth. And we are usually working around here in good high vacuum. But we will come to this. What is how we can define the criteria for vacuum, which is good enough. Because when we go down here to good ultra, then it costs much more, and we must pay very much attention to the materials and many other things. So in rough vacuum, we have viscous, and intermediate region, it's changing to molecular flow, and in high vacuum, it's mainly molecular, and starting from good high, it's molecular. And here already in good high region, we must pay attention into materials. So porous materials are not good because they contain a lot of gas. And tightness, we cannot have leaks there. And this baking, we are not making any bread or buns. But the vacuum vessel is baked, so it's heated. So that because there are molecules stuck on the surfaces, and we want to clean the surface so that we don't get so much so-called outgassing, which means molecules are escaping from the surface. So we clean the surfaces by baking first them to say 150 to 400 C, and pumping all the time. the outgassing is bigger at high temperatures, and then we let it cool down. And in ultra vacuum, surfaces stay clean. We'll come to this, because when when we have molecules in the volume, and molecules collide with the surface, some molecules are stuck stuck on the surface. And here, the choice of materials is critical. And we must have metal seals, no rubber sealing. And baking again here. And good ultra AC is then practically the same as here in ultra, but it's more difficult and more critical. Now, let's start pumping a vacuum chamber, which initially has air in normal pressure. So initially, it's air what we have inside. And when we have pumped it down to rough vacuum area, then it's mainly air. And at intermediate vacuum, then gas starts to get out from surfaces. This is outgassing. So whatever there is on the surfaces, that comes to the comes to the volume as residual gas. And at high vacuum, the many gases from surfaces, we have already pumped practically the air away, which is nitrogen mostly, then oxygen, argon, and some other gases. And at high vacuum is typically water, 70 to 90%, depending on what has happened before. I will come to that. And gradually the water decreases, and then it's mostly carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide when we have pumped the water away. One special thing in water molecules is that it has an electric dipole moment. So it has a positive and negative end, whereas carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, they don't have. And if, but here carbon monoxide, that it has different molecules on its end, so it will stick on the surface. But carbon dioxide, there is a carbon between and oxygen just on the opposite sides, so both ends look the same. Okay, but water, because it has electric dipole moment, permanent electric dipole moment, then it sticks to surfaces much easier. Okay, now we go even to better vacuum, ultra vacuum. Now it's mainly hydrogen. So we have pumped carbon oxides away. Of course, the number of molecules is going down all the time. It's just relative fractions of these gases. And everything here, it depends how much water, for example, here and so forth, and what we have left, and how much it be. It depends on the pumps and the pre-pumps. We will come to pumps in the next lecture. And most pumps pump easier heavy gases, and noble gases are more difficult to pump, at least in those pumps where the molecules are stuck on the surface of the pump. And the lesson that we have learned here is that principally residual gas is not thin air. It's thin air in the beginning. So at some stage, it's mainly water vapor, and then carbon oxides, and in the end, hydrogen. So the composition depends on the pressure. And also, the condition of residual gas depends on how long time the vessel has been open. So how many layers of molecules have been stuck on the surfaces that we won't need to get away. And how it was vented. This venting means that when we let some gas go in, if it's not vented with air, air has water molecules, and the water molecules stick easily on the surface because it has electric dipole moment. So a good way, a wise way of venting vacuum chamber is to first use just dry nitrogen. A nitrogen molecule, it sticks on the surface, but it's not so strongly stuck there as water molecule. So it's easier to get away. And then also, if you have some leaks, for example, then that affects the composition of residual gas. Now these are the main things that has something to do with the composition. Now, one very practical thing, vacuum forces. The force is pressure times the area. And inside the vacuum chamber, we have something like 10 to minus something millibar. 10 to minus something is always very close to zero. So inside we have zero pressure, and outside we have one atmosphere. And then the force on the inside, there is no force practically if you compare it to the force which is coming from the outside. So from the outside, we have this atmosphere here times the area. If you have 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters square flange, then it's 10,000 newtons. So like 10 kilograms standing on an area which is 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters. And if it's square meter, it's 100 times more. And then it's a huge force. And this is important when you are designing vacuum vessels, so that it can hold its shape when we pump it down to vacuum. Very, very important thing this year. Okay, some constant as equations. So Avogadro constant, this many about 6 times 10 to 23 molecules per mole. So this is how one mole is defined. And if you take, for example, 1 mole of ideal gas, many gases we can regard as ideal gas, then in normal temperature and pressure, 1 mole is 22.4 liters. So for example, take a water vapor. Well, it's not really ideal gas, not at all. But if you take it as an ideal gas, then 1 mole of water is 18 grams, 18 milliliters. Then when it vaporizes, if it was ideal gas, then it would be 22.4 liters. But it's not really, but we can get the order of magnitude at least. All right. And then molar gas constant, 8.3 joules per mole per Kelvin. An equation of state in terms of moles, pressure times volume is number of moles times this constant, molar gas constant, times temperature. And what was it? Pressure, which is the same as energy density, times volume. So this is energy. And this, as you see, it's energy divided by a number of moles, or moles here, and temperature. So we get energy here. If we then, instead of moles, if we are talking about molecules, then we have this K, which is this molar constant divided by Avogadro number. We get this number here, and then the equation of state becomes like this. So instead of a number of moles, we have a number of molecules, and instead of this R constant, we have this K constant. But nevertheless, it is the same thing, energy. Now, number of gas molecules in a certain volume. So if you have 1 cubic centimeter in normal 10% pressure, from this equation of state, we can get number of molecules like now in air is 2.5 times 10 to 19 molecules in cubic centimeter. And even if you have so good vacuum mass, 10 to minus 7 millibars, 10 to minus 5 pascals, we have still 2.5 times 10 to the 9 molecules in cubic centimeter. Not empty at all. Then let's talk about energy, because pressure was energy density. So ideal gas, it follows Maxwell-Boltzmann theory, and the energy distribution can be written like this. We are not going to derive this. So here we have the, here, this should be a small e here. Sorry about that. I will change that to the PDF file. So this is the energy here. This is E, small e. And the average translation energy of a gas molecule from here, it's 3/2 times K times T. So 1/2 KT for each direction. So for each degree of freedom. X, Y, and Z directions. Okay. And if we plot it, so here we have energy of the molecules in milli electron volts, and here is the density. And the numbers here are fixed to so that we have altogether 1,000 molecules. So at room temperature, 20 degrees C, the average translation energy is 38 millielectron volts. But as you can see, this is a rather broad distribution. This goes up to something like 150 millielectron volts. And at liquid nitrogen temperature, minus 196 C, it's 10 millielectron volts. It goes up to say 50, 60 millielectron volts. And at 1,000 C, it's very, very broad, and the average is 167 millielectron volts. And energy, translation energy, so it's 3/2 times NKT, so 1/2 NKT or NRT here for each degree of freedom. And if you have a two atom molecule, it's rotating, it has also energy, then it's NKT for this rotation energy. Now velocity, we can get it from the from the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution by putting here for this E and this E here 1/2 mv squared. And we get this distribution in terms of velocity. And then the average velocity looks like this, and the most probable looks like this. Let's just look at the distribution and the numbers. So again, 1,000 nitrogen molecules, it doesn't have any effect on this axis, but only on these numbers here. So at room temperature, the average velocity of nitrogen molecules, so air is mainly nitrogen, it's 471 meters per second, so roughly half a kilometer per second. And as we can see, it's here, 1 kilometer up here. Okay, but this is usually what we need here. Okay, let's go this way. Oh, sorry. Now, if you look at this velocity for several molecules, different molecules, as a function of temperature, then we can see the difference. And now there's an application in energy saving windows and thermal insulators. And which gas would it be? A light one? Well, hydrogen is not very good because it's flammable, explosive even. Helium. Perhaps, but it's quite expensive. And nitrogen, here we have air, and then some other here. And the heavier, the slower. We should perhaps look at some other things as well as a function of mass, but this already shows what's the choice. So heavier is better for insulators. Like in energy saving windows, it may be argon. Xenon would be even better, but it's more expensive. molecules are hitting on the surface, and then from the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution, we can derive this collision rate per unit area. So the pressure divided by this 2 pi mkt, the square root of that. And so this is a collision rate per unit area, how many collisions per square meter. And time to form one molecular layer. So we just have here 1 over this rate, and here the size area of the molecule. So this xi here is the molecular diameter. So this, it's a bit rough here, this time here, but anyway, so it assumes that we are all the collisions, they come to different place, and it forms one layer. Take an example. In ultra vacuum, where hydrogen is the dominating gas, and if you have 10 to minus 5 pascals, so 10 to minus 7 millibars, and at room temperature, the molecular layer formation time is, here have the equation and put in numbers. So this is the mass. Here, put, and so this here, actually, it is mu times u. U is atomic mass unit, and this is the average mass here. And putting numbers in, we get about 13 seconds. So 10 to minus 7 millibar or 10 to minus 5 pascals, it takes a bit more than 10 seconds to form a molecular layer. And we can easily understand that this vacuum is not good enough for some work where we don't want any residual gas molecules to stick on the surface of the thing that we are making, like silicon wafers. Collision distance, this is very important. Well, like many others as well. So from the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution, we can derive the average collision distance between. So average collision distance, which is called mean free path. So it is average collision distance between two collisions, and it's this here, and this xi here is the diameter of the molecule. And if you take it for a nitrogen molecule, which is mainly the air at room temperature and normal pressure, it's 64 nanometers. So they are colliding very often. This is much less than the wavelength of visible light. And the distance goes as the inverse of the pressure. So so here we have the atmospheric pressure, 64 nanometers. We go three orders of magnitude better vacuum, it's 64 micrometers, and so forth. One thing I must say that if so usually we have a residual gas and we have fast moving particles. In our case, they are ions, and in some places they are electrons. For ions, remember that the average velocity of nitrogen molecules in NTP was about 0.5 km/s. And in our injection line, it's hundreds of kilometers per second, up to 2,000 km/s. It's much more than 0.5 km. Or coming out from the cyclotron, then we have something like 10% of the velocity of light. So during the passage of or traveling of, from accelerator to the target, it doesn't take very much time for our accelerated ions, and during that time the residual gas molecules practically don't move at all. So if the residual gas molecules are not moving in the time scale of passage, then the probability of collision is less. And here you can see that the factor is square root of 2 for ions. For electrons, it is four times that. And why is that? Electron is so much smaller that the cross-section is smaller for the collision. And now this means that for 10 to minus 5 pascals, which is 10 to minus 7 millibar, this average mean free path is about 900 meters, about 1 km. And this is our criterion for our vacuum level, because the particles travel inside the cyclotron something like 1 to 3 kilometers. Sorry. And then the beam tube from the cyclotron to the furthermost point is about 80 meters. So it's mainly the distance inside the cyclotron. So you must have 10 to minus 7 millibars, roughly. And we can see this if the vacuum is worse, then we start losing particles because of collisions against the residual gas molecules. So the vacuum criteria, when we want to know what vacuum level is good enough for us. So for the beam transport and accelerators, the mean free path should be at least the trajectory length. That's one. but for example, in storage rings, the mean free path is very, very long because they are traveling millions and millions times around the storage ring. And there will be decay time due to collisions. So the intensity of stored ions goes down. And there, what this decay time is, how long you want to keep the beam alive, so to say, then that that defines practically the effective trajectory length. And for clean manufacturing, like crystal growth, surface manipulation, electronics, so forth, the time for building one molecular layer. So that defines the vacuum level. And you can think of if there's anything else. And some things about vacuum pumps and properties, capacity of a vacuum pump. So pumping speed, how many cubic meters per second, and transmission of the pump is then this pumping speed times the pressure. Conductance of a slow flow channel. So this is transmission, and this is the pressure difference between the inlet and outlet of this channel, and this is the conductance. Inverse of conductance is we can think that it's a resistance. Okay, so here it is. One of the conductors is resistance. And here I have given three different conductances for a long round tube. Here it's an incompressible flow like water. And here we don't need to go very, very detailed here. So this is the average velocity and the dimension. Here we have viscosity also for this laminar flow. And here you see that it depends on the pressure like this for incompressible flow. And if it's laminar flow, then the pressure difference is like this. But in the same tube for molecular flow, it has just dimensions, no pressure difference at all. Okay, that was this lecture. And in the next lecture, we shall go to pumps. So thank you.